Hey everybody, Brian McClanahan here. Are you looking for a great website that gives you history the way it was intended to be told, with no PC, no Marxism, no progressivism? Well, I've got it for you. It's learntruehistory.com. That's learntruehistory.com. Learn history from great professors who don't sugarcoat it for you. This is not for your delicate flowers. That's learntruehistory.com. learntruehistory.com. This is the Brian McClanahan Show.
3, 2, 1, 0, liftoff.
Welcome back to the Brian McClanahan Show. This is episode 77. Glad to have you back on the program. Before we get started today, I'd like to remind everyone to like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and like my YouTube page. And if you like this podcast, please share it around with your friends on social media. It will help spread the word. Also, coming up in about 30 days or so, I'll start running promotions for the forthcoming How Alexander Hamilton Screwed Up America, so you're going to want to watch for those. A great opportunity to get some extra goodies if you pre-order a book. So please consider that. Coming around June, the book comes out in September, so there'll be some time to pick it up, but I'd like to see a lot of pre-orders. It'll help get the book in more bookstores. So I hope you're going to enjoy that book. I think it's going to be a great book, and the goodies I'm going to give away are going to be really good. So you're going to want to get the book pre-ordered, because you're going to get something that you won't get should you buy it the day that it comes out or after it comes out. So think about that. The book is coming up again in September, and I think it's going to be really cool. Also, I'll announce, the foreword was written by Ron Paul, so it has a nice endorsement to it, and I think that you're going to enjoy it. So look for that. Come around June. I'll have the goodies, promotions ready to go, so hopefully you'll pick up a copy. All right. Well, today I want to talk about a topic that it was in the news yesterday. It's May 2nd. This was in the news on May 1st. It didn't really get a lot of headlines, but it did. I think The Hill covered it first, and then some other news sites picked it up. LA Times, Chicago Tribune, CNN talked about it. So several outlets did eventually mention this. And it had to do with an interview that Donald Trump gave on Sirius XM satellite radio about Andrew Jackson and the quote-unquote Civil War. And so I want to talk about this because the response was predictable and stupid at the same time. So I think that it's something that people need to be aware of. Trump apparently stepped in it again, because in this interview on Sirius XM satellite radio with, the woman's name was Selena Zito, he basically said that if there had been better leadership, could the Civil War have been prevented? And he said this, he, meaning Andrew Jackson, was really angry that he saw what was happening with regard to the Civil War. There's no reason for this. And a lot of people picked up on this thinking that Trump believed that Andrew Jackson was somehow still alive in 1861. That's not what Trump was saying. Before that, he talked about how Jackson was a real good soul, and that if Jackson had been around in 1861, he could have stopped the war from happening. Essentially saying that if there was better leadership in 1861, the war wouldn't have happened. And so what Trump was doing here essentially was throwing Abraham Lincoln under the bus. That Lincoln could have prevented the war, that perhaps James Buchanan could have prevented the war, but the war came anyways. Now, I will say this. James Buchanan did prevent the war. This is something that most people don't think about with James Buchanan. He's often regarded as the worst president in American history. But I think Buchanan gets a bad rap. Because, there are a couple things that Buchanan did that weren't good. But preventing the war was one of the things that was good. Buchanan didn't start shooting when South Carolina left the Union in December of 1860. He didn't start shooting when six other states left the Union in January and February of 1861. Lincoln becomes president in March of 1861, and within a month, they're shooting. So Buchanan was preventing the war. He was saying, look, I don't think secession is legal, but I don't really have any power to stop this thing. So in that way, Buchanan was better than Lincoln. Now, if you're saying that better leadership could have prevented the South from leaving the Union, perhaps that's also something that we could talk about. And I'm going to get into some of these things because there was a couple of articles written in response to Trump's statements at the Atlantic that I want to talk about. But of course, Trump also said, you know, was the Civil War necessary, essentially? Was it necessary? Did we have to have a Civil War? I mean, he said this was an awful situation. Perhaps we could have avoided the war. And that's what really set the leftist media off. First of all, you know, the USA Today ran a headline, "Note to Donald Trump, Andrew Jackson wasn't alive for the Civil War." Ha ha. That's funny. But that's not what Trump was saying. The LA Times responded, "Trump makes puzzling claim about Andrew Jackson's Civil War." And of course, every other news media outlet picked this up. Same headline. You know, this is all groupthink in the popular media. And then, of course, social media was on fire after this. The snarky liberal establishment dimwit historian Kevin Krause, you know, "When the Civil War came, Andrew Jackson had been dead for 15 years. You know, zing, you nailed it, Krause. I'm sure that, you know, it takes a Princeton prof to come up with that one. But Krause is all over this all day, you know, picking on Trump, talking about how he doesn't know anything about history, and of course retweeting all of his attaboys from his colleagues. But the real problem came from The Atlantic. Now, no one reads The Atlantic magazine, and I only saw this because Krause had posted them to his Twitter feed, so I thought I would read them. And they're typical drivel. So the first one was written by a leftist twit named David Graham, and the title of the piece was "Trump's Peculiar Understanding of the Civil War." Now, if you look at the URL for that particular piece, it's kind of funny because the URL is "Trump magna cum laude from the Dunning School," which is interesting. So he's already trying to show that, you know, how smart he is, you know, about American history. But first, he makes a number of interesting or peculiar claims in this piece. First, nullification is unconstitutional because the federal courts say so, which is hogwash. Two, the Civil War, this is his quote, was fought over slavery in the insistence of Southern states that they be allowed to keep it. Number three, the Civil War wasn't tragic because the great thinker Ta-Nehisi Coates said so in 2011. And another one, war was inevitable because of the Confederate States' commitment to slavery. That's his quote. And last, if Trump had read really great history like Doris Kearns Goodwin's Lincoln biography, Team of Rivals, he would have had a different position on the war. Now, that position is hysterical because, for a number of reasons. First of all, Goodwin's a noted plagiarizer, but the book is just completely bunk. And Tom DiLorenzo had a wonderful takedown of that book on LouRockwell.com. And, it's just fantastic. Takes apart everything she says, how she made stuff up, how she became the establishment historian in this particular case, and how even after she was busted for plagiarizing several books and other books, not just in one book of hers, but several books of hers, the establishment rallied around, they circled the wagons around her, and they said, you know, this woman, we need to pay attention to her because she does good work. Well, yeah, because she says everything the establishment wants people to say. But he also, Graham also dusts off the Dunning School. He says this, "Many Americans are still taught incorrectly that the war was essentially a conflict over states' rights with abolition as a byproduct of the war." Well, that's what it was. Abolition was a byproduct of the war. "This revisionist view flourished after the war, and though gradually being displaced, is common across the country." That's because that's not really the revisionist view. That's what the war was. That's the traditional. And as you know, this is the revisionist calling traditional history revisionism. This entire piece was revisionism. So I'll get into, you know, taking apart some of those things in a second. And then The Atlantic followed up with a piece by Yanni Applebaum, "Why There Was a Civil War." Applebaum was at least kind to Trump. He didn't berate Trump for suggesting that historians don't ask if the Civil War could have been avoided. He berates him for claiming that the war could have been avoided. And his quote, "by the omission of a critical word, slavery." Applebaum believes that the war begins and ends with slavery with nothing but slavery. And of course, he provides a quote from Lincoln saying that, and then and as Graham does, he quotes all of these Southern states' declarations of causes that seem to prove his point. that it was all slavery that caused the war. But here's a problem. What Applebaum does is attach a moral crusade to the issue of the war. There was no moral crusade in 1860 or 61. Most Northerners could care less about the institution of slavery in the South. What they were concerned about, if you're going to say that slavery was important, and I can say that it was important, is the extension of slavery into the Western territories. They didn't want slaves being brought into places like Nebraska or Kansas. And the question always has to be, why? Why didn't they want slaves brought into the Western territories of Kansas or Nebraska? That's because they wanted this territory for free white people. They didn't want any competition from slaves. They didn't want any competition from black Americans because that was seen as dangerous to their well-being. The Republican Party made a habit of saying very racist things. In fact, one of the major criticisms they had of the Democratic Party was that it was the party of mixed-race people. The Republican Party said this. In Iowa, for example, that was one of their main campaign planks. You know, you don't want to vote for the Democrats because they're all about, you know, mixed race. We want to have a party of pure white people. So it's really funny that these revisionists like Applebaum and Graham are somehow saying the war was a moral crusade to end slavery. From the beginning, it was a moral crusade to end slavery. From the beginning, as Applebaum says, there's just things you can't compromise on. And one of those has to be slavery. And of course, Lincoln wouldn't compromise on slavery because he is a good man who was an abolitionist to his core. This guy really believed. I mean, this is the impression you get from reading the piece. If that's not revisionism, I don't know what is. So let's take apart some of these things. Now, first, Trump praising Jackson is a little bit strange. It's troubling. Jackson provided the blueprint for Lincoln's heavy-handed tactics toward the South in 1861 during the Nullification Crisis in the 1830s. As Jackson did want to march into South Carolina and hang John C. Calhoun. He was an advocate of the force bill, which, by the way, South Carolina nullified. What's interesting is that when Henry Clay works out a compromise and the tariff comes down, the force bill passes. South Carolina, in a convention, again convenes. They rescind their nullification of the tariff and then nullify the force bill. So nullification still worked. Nullification worked from the beginning. And it doesn't rely on the federal courts, as Graham suggests. Well, the courts have said this is unconstitutional, but people keep bringing it up on the right. You know, it's just these right-wingers that keep bringing up nullification. Really? Really? It seems like nullification is being used quite often today by the left. When you look at things like sanctuary cities, that's leftist nullification. Or marijuana laws, that's leftist nullification. But Graham, who linked to a piece that he wrote about nullification, was all about Mike Huckabee saying that the states would just ignore a federal court decision on same-sex marriage, for example. So, again, selective outrage here. And not only that, revisionist history to the core. Because nullification, of course, the idea of it was discussed, essentially, when the Constitution was going through ratification. Even Alexander Hamilton, nationalists like Hamilton and James Wilson, suggested that laws contrary to the Constitution would be void. And they didn't say the courts would do it. Basically, the states wouldn't follow the law if it was an unconstitutional law. Of course, Jefferson and Madison made it clear the states would do it. But that aside, so we shouldn't praise Andrew Jackson. He is one of my nine presidents who screwed up America. But so was Abraham Lincoln. The real problem with the piece, in these pieces in The Atlantic, is the insistence that the war was inevitable and some moral conflict over slavery caused the shooting. Now, Applebaum correctly understands that the entire early period of American history was built on compromise. From the Constitution forward, we had compromises, and it wasn't just on slavery. I mean, slavery was an issue that was at the forefront at times. But Northerners weren't talking about abolishing slavery where it already existed. They never did. It's about slavery extension. And the ability of a state, particularly when you look at the first compromise outside of the Constitution, when you look at the first compromise in Missouri, was whether a state could decide to have slavery itself. That was the issue. Can the general government dictate to a state what kind of constitutional form of government it would have? As long as it's Republican, it can't say anything else. And that was the issue with Missouri. And it was all about power politics at that point. Missouri was going to upset the balance of power in the Senate between the South and the North. The North knew it, which is why just a few years before that, in 1815, they were trying to have a two-thirds majority for admitting new states, while they were having, while they wanted to rescind the three-fifths compromise of the Constitution, because they recognized that gave the South more power. Why they wanted to mandate that the president comes from a different state each election in a one term, only one term, four-year term. So the North was well aware that they were a political minority, and they didn't want to remain a political minority, which is why the slavery issue became important, because they realized it could drive a wedge between the South and the West, and that was important to them. This is the Hartford Convention just 5 years before that. So that was the first great compromise over slavery once the government was put into place. Now, Applebaum brings up the Constitution and how it was the slaveholders who got concessions out of the North. Well, why did the slaveholders want to have more representation in Congress? In fact, Southerners wanted to count slaves as one whole person towards representation. The North said, no, these people aren't people, they're property, so we want to count them as zero. But it's interesting because Southerners were actually defending slaves as people in the Philadelphia Convention. You can go read it yourself. That's often missed. But the fact is, we got the three-fifths compromise. And why did the South want this? Well, they wanted it because they wanted to ensure that they could check Northern power over taxes. And the only way to do that, and of course this comes down to political economy, the only way to do that was to have more representation. And Southerners saying that slaves are people, we should count them as one whole person, recognizes the humanity of slaves. Which, that's not the narrative you get. The narrative you get is, well, these Southerners only thought slaves are three-fifths of a person. No, they thought they were one whole person. Northerners thought they didn't count. They were zero. So who really thinks that slaves are people, the North or the South? Outside of that, you have to look at some of the other things that came out of the Philadelphia Convention, immediately afterwards. George Mason, for example, criticizing the North because they left the slave trade open, which he thought was a very bad idea. And of course, the North was going to make a heck of a lot of money on the slave trade. It wasn't the South that was always pushing to have the slave trade open. The North wanted it too. He said, you've done that, which is heinous, but yet you've now caused problems for slavery in the future, which he said was the softer side of the issue. Now, I'm not going to say that's correct, but he's looking at it and saying one is worse than the other, and the one that's the worst, you left open. We should have closed the slave trade, because that's awful. But we didn't do that, because Northerners wanted to keep it open. So that compromise is mischaracterized in Applebaum's piece. But that aside, he brings up all these other compromises, and he says, basically, this is why we couldn't compromise in 1860 and 61. This is why Lincoln was taking a stand against compromise, because we've always compromised, and all we've gotten was just a bad government and a bad republic. So we couldn't do that in 1860. No more compromise, no compromise. And Lincoln was, he wasn't going to compromise. I guess Applebaum missed the fact that Abraham Lincoln supported a proposed 13th Amendment, which would have made slavery perpetual in the South. It would have prevented the federal government from ever abolishing it. Or that he supported, at least at one point, potentially another compromise on the Western territories. Lincoln was not interested in abolishing slavery in the South. He didn't care. He made this very clear. He made this very clear in speech after speech. I'm not going to interfere with slavery. It already exists. I'm not going to do it. So how is that a guy that's, so interested in ending slavery? Now, I would say that I don't know if Lincoln was very interested in compromise, because he had an opportunity to do so, and he kept telling the representatives on the Committee of 13, which was charged with sifting through compromise proposals after South Carolina left the Union, don't really compromise on these things. Don't support these compromises. The committee had compromise proposals that would have worked, that would have saved the union. Only South Carolina was out of the union at that point. The rest of the union was still there. And South Carolina may have come back in the union. So the union could have been saved in 1860 without firing a shot. But that's not what Lincoln really wanted. That's not really a work of a leader, as Applebaum and Graham say. Even after six other states left the Union, as Senator James Byrd of Delaware said, the Union still existed, just without seven states in it. The government was still there, the banking houses still existed, the infrastructure remained, we had an army and a navy in the United States. So the insistence on the Confederate states' slavery issue really had nothing to do with the war. Secession and war are separate issues. Secession didn't mean war was inevitable. This is a creation, a fabrication of the North. Most Americans hoped otherwise. Even in the South, where President Jefferson Davis insisted that the South simply wanted to be left alone. To think the opposite really is to assume the posture of the British in 1776, and that's un-American. And this also doesn't recognize that there were still six other slave states in the Union after the seven deep Southern states had left the Union. So slavery was still in the Union. And Lincoln really wasn't worried about slavery at that point. Remember, again, the proposed 13th Amendment. He promised to leave slavery alone in these states. Lincoln's objective was to preserve the Union. But what Union? By preserving the Union, Lincoln meant the Republican Party and his fledgling administration. If he let the South go, it certainly would have been a one term for Lincoln. The Republican Party would have been dead, and that would have been it for the Republicans. I mean, this was the last stand for the Republican Party. Remember, Lincoln only got 39.6% of the popular vote in 1860. Nobody really wanted him as president, for good reason. Now, if he had let the South go, of course, slavery would have continued to exist. It would have continued to exist in the Union. It would have continued to exist in the Confederacy. But this was not a moral question. The Republican Party didn't dabble in moral truths. Their objective was always political. Bottle the South up, ensure the Whig economic agenda could be ascendant, and control the spoils. That's what Lincoln wanted. That's what the Republicans wanted. If the issue is settled, Lincoln doesn't get elected in 1864. The Democrats are going to crush the Republicans next election cycle, and the Republicans will be a very brief footnote in American history. And who knows? Perhaps the South eventually comes back in the Union. There were other choices to be made in 1860 and 61. You didn't have to choose war, but Lincoln did choose war. And the war really was a tragedy, regardless of what Coates has to say. I mean, Coates, people run this guy out here like he's some great scholar. The guy's as much claim to a scholar as David Barton, who doesn't really have much claim to being a scholar. He's a journalist. He didn't even finish his degree. But yet somehow he's this great Civil War scholar. Give me a break. But since he writes for The Atlantic and he's criticized people for the war, I mean, he said, you know, the war wasn't a tragedy. Killing all these people wasn't a tragedy. I mean, are you serious? The simple fact is Lincoln wanted war. He really did. He had the chance to save the Union without war in March of 1861. He rejected attempts to peacefully purchase federal property. And began polling his cabinet about provisioning Fort Sumter less than a week after taking office, knowing full well it would cause war. As he later told a political ally, his decision to provision Fort Sumter had the desired outcome, meaning armed conflict. Really, nothing can sugarcoat this. Trump may have been onto something here at the end of the day. Better leadership could have avoided the carnage. But saying that now is considered sacrilege. How close-minded of the liberal historical profession and establishment gatekeepers of accepted truth. So there are so many problems with this Atlantic peace. It's hard to know where to start, or these Atlantic pieces. But the real issue here does come down to Lincoln. And the fact that you know, emancipation, it was a war aim. Lincoln said it was best used to, or used to best subdue the enemy. And of course, it didn't free any slaves in the areas where slavery existed in the Union. So Lincoln wasn't interested in freeing slaves. He was interested in subduing the enemy. And the question is, if Lincoln said that these states were still in the Union, then this law, this Emancipation Proclamation, was completely unconstitutional because it denied Southerners, if you say slavery is proper, slaves are property, denied their property without due process. So they couldn't even do this legally if those states are still in the Union. There's no due process here. The federal government had no control over the institution of slavery, according to Article 1, Section 8. And that was always the issue. So again, in 2017, we can look back at this and say, well, that was horrible. But in 1861 or 62 or 63, this was the law. And you have to follow the law. If you don't have the law, I mean, what is there? I know Seward went out and said that there was a higher law than the Constitution. But that puts you in a very dangerous situation. You know, how do you debate what's legal and what's not? If there's a higher law. So both of these pieces were a mess. And I think that's what the problem with this entire attack on Donald Trump. They miss the real issue here, and that's Lincoln's lack of leadership and his headlong rush into war. Trump was right. I mean, somebody with a better political acumen, better negotiating skills, probably could have avoided war in 1860, when only South Carolina was out of the Union. It probably could have avoided war in 1861, when only 7 states were out of the Union. And yes, slavery would have existed in the South and maybe in the North, the United States as well. But it was abolished everywhere by 1880, so probably maybe for another 20 years. I think mechanized farming would have made slavery obsolete, ultimately. And that was within 20 years we were going to have that. So the fact is, the institution could have been ended in a different way, should have been ended in a different way than the, you know, million people that were required to end it in the United States. And that was only secondary. I know Graham says it wasn't secondary. It's from the beginning, this is what people wanted. No. No, in fact, there were mass desertions in the Union Army when the Emancipation Proclamation was issued. Many Union soldiers said, I'm not fighting to free slaves. No way. Now, eventually, they begrudgingly accepted it. But for the most part, I mean, this was widely resisted. So, we have to be very careful about these revisionists at the Atlantic giving us our history, because they're going to give it to you wrong with an agenda. And that agenda is the Lincoln myth, the worship of Abraham Lincoln as the greatest president in American history. And this somehow, this new revisionist perspective that the war was all slavery and nothing but slavery, even from the beginning, from day one, this is what it was about. And that somehow secession and the war are the same thing. Secession didn't have to produce war. Lincoln made that choice. He made that choice. People can say, well, the South fired the first shot. Well, the South did fire at Fort Sumter only after Lincoln instigated the issue. And he was warned not to do so by his military advisors, by Winfield Scott. So don't do it. Don't provision the fort. So Scott was sacked. And they got what they wanted, which was war. I don't think there's any other way to look at this. Lincoln wanted the South to fire at Fort Sumter because he wanted to use the military to coerce the Southern states and keep them in the Union, quote unquote. This is the position of the British in 1776. Again, un-American. So it's fun when Trump comes out and says something like this, because the leftist media goes nuts, they go ballistic, and they expose themselves for being the idiots that they are. And, you know, these people are supposedly the enlightened. I mean, these are the enlightened ones, the ones that are so smart. You know, Kevin Krause is so smart. He's just so smart. This guy is just so brilliant. Coates is just so brilliant. Just brilliant people. And we have to respect these brilliant people. They're just so smart. That's all I have to say about that. I'll see you next time on the Brian McLean Show.